My name is Jörg Schwinger, and I'm talking also on behalf of Henrik Elban, who unfortunately cannot attend this meeting. And the title of my talk is Cross-Validation of MIPAS and Halo Traceguards Observations by Means of Four-Dimensional Variational Data Assimilation. I first want to answer the question why it is a good idea to use assimilation techniques for the cross-comparison of trace gas observations of different sensors. Then I give a short description of the assimilation system that we used, which is the 4D VAR SACADA assimilation system. Then, because it is important to ensure that the assimilation system is skillful enough to be employed for cross-comparison, we did a number of consistency checks, including a procedure to tune the error covariances of the system. And finally, I will show some results for MIPAS Halo Ozone profile comparison. Okay, there are basically two approaches for cross-comparing trace gas profiles from different satellite sensors. The first one may be called direct matching approach, and it consists in finding pairs of collocated profiles which have some which fulfill some collocation criteria in space and time. These collocation criteria may also involve the use of dynamical coordinates, for example, PV theta coordinates, to improve the collocation or to reduce the error that it made by the collocation. The drawback of this approach is that if you choose very strict collocation criteria, you will have very few coincident profiles, and hence the statistics of the comparison will be poor. This is especially the case for if one of the sensors has very sparse data, for example, like HALO, which is a solar occultation instrument, just having 15 profiles, a maximum of 15 profiles per day. A second approach is the trajectory mapping, which uses a model, which is a Lagrangian model, to bridge time and space differences between the measurements of two different sensors. However, this technique is not very often applied. The last article that I found was from Morris et al. From the year 2000. On this slide, I compiled some recent studies that use the direct matching approach for different instruments. And as you see, there seems to be no common agreement about what is an acceptable difference in space. The differences that are allowed are up to 1,000 kilometers. Here the lowest value is maybe 400 kilometers, or here these 1.5 degrees in latitude. There is some agreement about the maximum permitted time difference, which is almost in every case taken to be 6 hours, with a notable exception of this case, where they compared MIPAS and HALO profiles, and they had to increase the maximum permitted time difference in order to get enough coincident profiles. Yes, the data assimilation approach is described in a few words because it is very simple. You assimilate the observations of instrument A to obtain the best estimate of the atmospheric state, and afterwards you compare observation of instrument B to that analysis. The prerequisite from the data side is that the coverage of instrument A must be dense enough, because otherwise the analysis error would be maybe too large to make a good comparison. The advantages are obvious, I think, because the cross-validation is more or less a byproduct of the data assimilation procedure. And you do not have to think about coincidence criteria, because you compare the instrument B to the to some analysis, and you can use all available information of the sensor B. However, the things that have to be checked is the assimilation system skillful enough to enable such a comparison? And yes, the issues that have to be addressed include the statistical assumptions that are behind the theory of the 4D VAR, then specifications of background and observation error covariances, and model biases, and some other things. I will come to this back soon, but now I want to briefly introduce the SACADA system. SACADA, the acronym, is for Synoptic Analysis for Chemical Constituents with Advanced Data Assimilation, and it is a 4D VAR data assimilation system which uses the global forecast model GME of the German Weather Service as an online meteorological driver. This GME comes with an icosahedral grid, and a similar Grange transport scheme has been adopted from this model. We have a horizontal grid spacing of approximately 240 kilometers and 42 levels in the vertical from the surface to 0.1 hectopascal. The horizontal grid, this icosahedral grid, looks like this. It has the big advantage that it offers a nearly homogeneous distribution of grid points over the globe, so you do not have the problem of converging grid points towards the pole, which is computationally very effective. In the vertical, we have a hybrid sigma pressure coordinate system, and the assimilation for this study was restricted to 19 levels, from 2.4 hectopascal to 168 hectopascal. This is the red shaded region. This restriction has two or three reasons. First, the model performance is best in this range. Second, the performance of the retrievals is best, so the retrievals are said to be most sensitive in this region. Third, we could save some computational time. The chemistry module of the assimilation system accounts for 176 gas phase and 10 heterogeneous reactions. The reaction rates have been updated to the JPL recommendations 2006, and we use a KPP generated chemistry solver, which is the second order Rosenbrock without any family assumptions. We have joint modules for advection and gas phase chemistry and heterogeneous chemistry, and we use parametrization of the background error covariance matrix that was proposed by Viva and Gauthier. This is a diffusion approach which is also capable of flow dependence, so you can introduce some flow dependence, but we didn't use that for this study. Perhaps I should stress that we do not have any coupling between the meteorological part of the system and the chemical part. So we use the GME meteorological model only as a driver. There's no coupling with the chemistry. Okay, so I come back to what we have to check in advance before using our assimilation system for cross-comparing trace gap profiles. As you all know, one drawback of 4D VAR compared to Kalman filter methods is that we have to specify the background error covariances in advance. It's unlike the Kalman filter, who at least theoretically will compute us our background error covariance matrix from the last analysis. What can we do here? There are possibilities to check after the assimilation is made to do some consistency checks for the error variances, and then with these checks you can re-enter the assimilation procedure with new values for the error covariances, and with this iterative procedure you can at least ensure that the error covariances are consistently specified. What is about model bias or observation bias, because this is difficult to untangle. Model bias against observations can be detected using by inspecting observation minus background differences, and if everything is properly specified, then we can even estimate the analysis error that we get, but only in observation space, which is of course a restriction. I will begin with the specification of the error covariances. There was a paper of Desrosiers et al. From 2005 who devised these formulas, which gave you have these differences, DAB, DOB, and DOA, which are the differences between the analysis, the background, and the observation in different combinations, and everything in the observation space. And the expected value of these differences are these matrices. You see here is the observation operator in this formula, so it is also in the observation space, of course. There is a tilde on this matrix because this is not the true error covariance matrix, but if this is the true, if the true matrix was specified for the assimilation procedure where these quantities have been computed with, then this will be the true error covariance matrix. So the best what we can do is to ensure consistency of the system. We can compute, we can assume some B and some R, compute these quantities, and then they will differ in reality from what we have specified for the assimilation, and then we can correct our specified B and R, and this procedure will converge until the B and R that we specified is consistent with these quantities. And if we have this consistency, we can hope that this quantity is a measure of the an estimate of the analysis error covariance matrix in observation space. Okay, we did that. We adopted only a very simple two-parameter model for background and error observations, and background and observation errors. So we begin with specifying a 30% background error, and we imposed a minimum observation error of 10%, which means we take the observational error as given by the data provider, but it shouldn't be less than 10%. And then you see the following here. The dotted line is the background errors variances that we specified. The solid lines are the black solid line is the background error variance that is diagnosed by the formula from Desrosiers. And as well, the dotted red line is the specified observation error, and the red line, solid red line, is the diagnosed observation variance. So you see there's a large discrepancy here, and after some tuning we get to this result, which is still of course not perfect, or because we try to adapt only two parameters, which is not enough in practice. So this is a point where this model can be improved. We came out with a background error of 8% relative, and imposed an absolute background error of 0.08 ppm, and the minimum observation error by 6%. This is not entirely consistent, but it's, you can say it's roughly the same order of magnitude, and it is not very the specification of some relative error is not the ultima ratio, because it doesn't fit this here. Okay.
So it's more consistent, but if I look at the, say, the analysis error or something, I mean, mm-hmm. I would think that if the system is more consistent, it should be better. But it doesn't look like the, say, the analysis error has gone down. You know, the two panels, it's hard, a little hard to tell because of your scale, but I think, is the system actually giving you what seem to be better results, or is it just...
It does not mean that the analysis error should go down from here to here, because not necessarily. I didn't think about that, but because here's a misspecification between our a priori B that background errors that we assume and the real what it is diagnosed. Following to this formula, I don't think that would mean that...
It's just that you believe it more.
Yes, I think you can believe that. I wouldn't believe in specification of background error, of analysis error here, but I think that this is a more or less realistic estimate.
Just one more question. You have only two parameters, so a parameter would affect the whole profile, or the... parameter for each level?
No.
For the whole profile?
For the whole profile. So that is why this fit is not as good as it could be. So the second step would be to introduce some more sophisticated to... Also, this relative assumption is not very good. So I think it will be the best to specify for some latitude range, for some height ranges, some else. But this was the first try. Okay, what is a little bit funny here is that the diagnosed observation error is larger than the background error. So I wondered if this is realistic or not, but when you inspect the MIPAS profiles, which are delivered by ESA, then you very often have these oscillations in the upper part of the of this altitude range. And so it is. I think it is at least realistic that that our formula delivers an observation error which is larger than the background error. I don't think that these oscillations are very realistic. I think they might be artifacts from the retrieval algorithm. Okay, another consistency check is well known, I think. The expected value of the cost function at the analysis point divided by the number of observations should be 0.5, where, and I have plotted this for our case study period, and you see that, it tends to be a little bit larger, but it's almost 0.5. Another thing to see is that the background field is already within the error bar of the observation, because the value at the first iteration is below 1. Okay, now I come to the inspection of O minus B differences. From theory, these differences should be Gaussian if all assumptions are correct. What you see here is an histogram of O minus B differences, and for the whole range, for the whole model range. It is slightly asymmetric on this side, and of course, due to this asymmetry here, the red dashed line is Gaussian fit to the data with the same variance and the same midpoint as the data. So I investigated this further, and we found out that there is a model bias in the upper part of the model, in the tropics. So this is the 2.4 until to 10.7 hectopascal range, and here the distribution of ohm minus B differences is, I think, almost perfectly Gaussian, but it is biased by 0.2 ppm. And the remaining ohm minus B differences are look quite better, but there's still the fitted curve is still not fitting perfectly because we still have here these some non-Gaussianness in our distribution. The bias of the background with respect to MIPAS is found at tropical latitudes mainly, where also the MIPAS data is sparse. Yeah, and it is located in the region of the volume mixing ratio maximum. So this points to an inconsistency with the model photochemistry. The red line here is the MIPAS observations, the blue line is the analysis, and the black dotted line is the background. So you see here in this region the background is lower than the MIPAS observation. But this is for the halo comparison that I will present. This is not too bad because the halo profiles are not located in tropical latitudes for this region. Okay, come back to the estimate of analysis error in observation space. This blue, which is the blue line, of course, this estimate is only valid at the location of observations. But you can argue elsewhere, in other points, it will not be larger than the background error. So we have, as an estimate for the analysis error in observation space, at upper levels, we have it between 0.25 and 0.4 ppm at 2 hectopascal, and it is decreasing to 0.05 to 0.1 hectopascal at the lower model range. Okay, the case study setup was we did some assimilation in October, November 2003, and we assimilated MIPAS profiles provided by ESA in the data version 4.61. And we started with a spin-up assimilation of 8 days, initializing with Socrates zonal mean fields. And we successively adjusted the background error variances to the values that we found within our tuning procedure. Okay, the available halo data is shown here. This is the spin-up assimilation. There was no halo data, and in this time interval, we have a good coverage of halo data. The profiles are located in two distinct latitude bands. The sunset measurements are in the south, between minus 60 and minus 80 degrees, and the sunrise measurements are located here between mainly minus 30 and minus 50 degrees. In total, we have 241 halo profiles. Okay, now I'll show some individual profiles. The red solid line is a halo profile. The blue line, again, is the analysis, and I have sought for collocated profiles as well. The dotted line is the nearest MIPAS profile that I found, and I think that it's interesting to observe that almost in all cases here, the analysis is better than the collocated MIPAS profile, although the time and spatial differences are very small. It's only 1 hour here, 1 hour here, and 1.3 hours here, and it's all below 250 kilometers separation. Yes, I'm already almost finished. This is the mean differences for this comparison, and this is the southern latitude band. Okay, the measurements range from minus 67 to minus 61, and these are about 120 halo profiles in the south and in the north, and you see this is the difference. MIPAS analysis minus minus halo, so MIPAS is larger than halo throughout the whole vertical range, and so the MIPAS based analysis is larger than halo throughout the whole vertical range in both latitude bands. Okay, come to the conclusions. I think using assimilated fields is the most natural way of comparing profiles from different sensors, because no arbitrary collocation criteria have to be made. I think the SACADA system proves to be useful, although of course the system, there are some issues to be considered, mainly the bias problem in the tropics. A prerequisite of the data comparison is that at least one sensor must provide dense coverage in order to make the analysis error small, and a consistency between the data and model, which was in our case violated in this tropical tropical upper model levels. Okay, the main advantage is that the statistics of comparison is much better, especially if the data from the second sensor is sparse, as it was the case for this halo data, and in principle you can even compare reactive species. Okay, thank you.